This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. With the impeachment proceedings behind him and the out-in-the-open capture of the Department of Justice going pretty smoothly, President Trump is well on his way to securing the power he has sought all along. Maybe it's trite to quote George Orwell, but I'll do it anyway. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. For proof, look to our recent past, which has already been blurred to soften political dissent.
The National Archives has acknowledged that it made multiple alterations to this original photo of the enormous crowds at the 2017 Women's March, the day after Donald Trump's inauguration. Signs referencing women's anatomy were blurred, for example, as well as some signs that were critical of Trump.
That doctored photo, first reported last month, might just be the tip of the iceberg. Writing in the New York Times, Matthew Connolly, a professor of history at Columbia University, detailed new evidence that the National Archives is letting millions of documents from the Trump administration just vanish. He discovered his first clue 2 years ago.
Normally, the stuff that they decide they don't need to keep tends to be stuff like ordering printer copies, routine kinds of administrative matters. But what shocked people was how they wanted to delete records related to things like sexual assault of undocumented immigrants, how it is that many of them had died in custody because of bad medical treatment.
Now, some citizens and members of Congress actually paid attention and made a big noise. What effect did the pushback have on the retention of those particular documents?
So the National Archives took another look, and they decided that some of those records, specifically related to sexual assault and death in custody, those records, they would hold on to them. But they decided to go ahead with the destruction of many, many, many other records related to poor medical treatment, to human rights offenses and accusations. The argument was that these are things that they didn't think any future historian would have any interest in. They decided that those records were ones that they could delete after 3 years. So what that means is by the end of this year, they're going to be able to start destroying records from the first year of the Trump administration, when it first began to crack down on undocumented immigration.
What else is on the chopping block?
So in the State Department, the Undersecretary for Economic Affairs is responsible for a whole range of issues, like everything from aviation safety to the takeover of American firms by foreign nationals. All of those records are slated for destruction. In the Department of Interior, records related to protection of drinking water, enforcement of laws on endangered species, so the management or the mismanagement of native lands, native assets, all that stuff's going to get deleted too.
When I read your piece in the New York Times, part of me was enraged. But I was also mystified because I thought there was federal law like the Presidential Records Act and the Federal Records Act that specifically prohibited destruction of these records. Don't those laws apply here? What happened?
They do apply, but there are no real enforcement mechanisms. You know, when we had the Hillary Clinton email controversy, she had probably acted in violation of the Federal Records Act.
When she destroyed some tens of thousands of emails that she described as personal.
Right. And one reason why they never brought a case was because nobody has ever been prosecuted, even for the intentional destruction of federal records. To me, that was the real scandal. It wasn't so much, you know, this particular case, because there are so many cases like this, and nobody ever does anything about it. The Trump administration has just pushed things even further. Our president makes it a habit, whenever he's done working on something and there are some papers on his desk, he likes to tear those papers up into tiny little pieces and throw them in the garbage. This could not be a more obvious violation of the Presidential Records Act. And it turns out the National Archives did actually send staff to the White House to scotch tape those papers back together. And what happened to these people? They were fired.
Why am I laughing?
Because otherwise you'd be crying. I asked the general counsel of the National Archives as a hypothetical, you know, what if a president took their papers out onto the White House lawn, covered them with gasoline, lit a match, and set them all on fire? What would the National Archives do then? And what this gentleman told me is that under the Presidential Records Act, the only obligation the president has is to consult with the archivists of the United States on what he's planning to do with his own papers. Those papers don't become the property of the National Archives until the end of that administration. But I think it would be a fair question to ask, did this president consult with the archivists of the United States before he started tearing up his papers into tiny little pieces?
One obvious motive for this kind of conduct would be to obscure activities of the administration, to hide them from journalists, from citizens, from historians. But there's actually, you believe, an overriding motive that has nothing to do with reputation protection.
That's right. It basically comes down to money. The fact is, the National Archives has a smaller budget now than it did in 2008. When we had our last spending bill, the Democratic-controlled House of Representatives actually wanted to cut the National Archives even more than the Republican-controlled Senate.
Some of this is just a problem of scale, is it not? I mean, I read that the records of the George W. Bush administration alone are so large that it would take the current staff of the National Archives 250 years to essentially make their way through the whole bundle.
That's right. If they use the same methods they've been using for the last 100 years, then it will be centuries, you know, before we see the historical record of our time, or at least a large part of that record. But there are ways in which the National Archives could begin to automate the task of reviewing records for public release. The whole field of e-discovery, it's a multi-billion dollar field now where lawyers are using algorithms to sort through millions of legal documents to identify those that are required to produce for subpoenas or those that they're able to retain as privilege. So we're just waiting, all of us, for the government to catch up with what the private sector is already doing in terms of managing this kind of information.
This isn't just Professor Connolly posing that question. In your piece, you quote a guy named Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who, in explaining his decision to establish the first presidential library 80 years ago, wrote, quote, "A nation must believe in three things. It must believe in the past. It must believe in the future. It must, above all, believe in the capacity of its own people so to learn from the past that they can gain in judgment in creating their own future." Has that ceased to be the organizing principle of the National Archives?
Well, that's the question I ask myself every day. You know, why is it as a society we've stopped valuing the preservation of the past? Is it that we no longer believe in ourselves? Do we no longer believe in our children and their ability, you know, to learn from our mistakes? When will somebody in Congress, for instance, finally say enough is enough?
Matt, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Matthew Connolly is a professor of history at Columbia University. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leah Fetter, John Hanrahan, Astra Chattavetti, and Zandra Ellen. We had more help from Anthony Bansi and Eloise Blondio. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Brooke Gladstone will be back next week. I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.